today on Code Pen Radio.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Code Pen Radio. As you know, each week we kind of pick a theme and talk about that theme with all of us kind of co-founders of Code Pen. We're doing something a little bit different this week in that there's actually four people on the radio here. There's me, Chris Coyer. I have with me Tim Sabat.
That's me.
Alex Vasquez.
Hey there.
Yeah. And we have a fourth member of the party, our first guest ever on Code Pen Radio, Mr. David DeSandro. Hi, David.
Hey, hello.
Yeah. I thought we'd do this just for fun to kind of spice things up a little bit here on the radio show. And David is in a similar position to us as we've all four of us really have, you know, had various jobs around the tech industry and has somewhat recently gone off on his own to start his own business and kind of make his own way that way. I have that right, right?
That's right. Do my own thing.
Yeah. Which is under the name Metaphysi.
Yep. Metaphysi. Yeah, that's me.
Cool. So maybe we'll just talk about that a little bit. Metaphysi is a just, I don't know, it's the name of your business, but it's kind of a umbrella brand over a couple of individual products you make. You want to tell us about them?
Sure thing. Yeah. So, what I do, what Metaphysi is web widgets, you know, things where you're on a website and you press a button and something happens. And that's kind of what I like to focus on, a lot of front-end development. And so I've created, you know, three different products. The most popular one is Isotope, which is like when you're on a site with a grid and then you click one button to filter things and it filters a bunch of items. So if you're like, yeah, you want to see all the red shirts and not all shirts, but just red shirts. It allows you to filter that with an animation. And then there's Packery, which is kind of similar, but has a different layout algorithm, which uses bin packing algorithm. And then I just released a new product called Flickity, which is like a carousel widget. So, you know, a slider, one of those kind of standard things. So that's what Metaphysi is. And the way it actually makes money is that these things are sold with a commercial license. So if you're using one of these products on a commercial site or for commercial reasons, you should pay for a commercial license. This list allows you to appropriately use it for that use case. And that's about how Metaphysi operates.
Yeah, that's cool. As we were kind of preparing for this, Tim kind of had a question about the licensing and stuff. You want to?
Yeah, sure. It's pretty interesting to me that you guys, I've always wondered about this in products that I've paid for, licensed, whatever. Is there like, how do you police that thing? Like, do you have Mr. T show up at people's houses if they're not paying? Like, what goes down?
I haven't reached out to Mr. T yet, but I've kind of accepted that, you know, what I'm selling here is a front end resource. And so there's really no way to, I mean, there are ways to kind of make it more difficult for people to use or to police it. But there's really no way for me to prevent people from just using it, like viewing source and copying the relevant code, right? Like mm-hmm. Even if you have like a developer tools, you can open up, beautify the code right there, copy it. And so I don't. And it's actually, you know, like I only have so much time. So spending a lot of time figuring out who's using it and who's not is not really worth my time.
Gotcha. Have you ever noticed like somebody, you don't have to name them, but have you ever noticed somebody you're like, they are not paying me for this thing?
It's hard to tell because if there might be a huge site that goes up, like, you know, like Target uses it and I can't tell if Target uses it or like an agency bought it to use it for Target. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the whole piracy or policing, I've just accepted it and let it go. And it's kind of like a neat thing because typically usually when you're selling something, it's like, that's the biggest concern. It's like, why would people even pay for this, right? Mm-hmm. If they can just get it for free. So your question's absolutely valid.
Gotcha. Yeah, we use Fusion Passenger, and they have a free version and a paid version. We use the paid version. And it's like kind of up to you. You tell them how many servers you're using it on because it's literally in the back end of your stack. And they just trust that you're going to do the right thing. And we generally do, you know. So I guess it works because it works for us.
I would think there's enough companies out there that just don't, they of course do the right thing. They're you know, it's no question to them that they need to stay on the right side of the law with this stuff because the repercussions are nasty enough, you know, not even legally, but just, it's just bad mojo when somebody kind of calls you out for using some kind of small developer's tool and not paying for it and stuff. It's just it ends up being kind of a trivial amount of money for something like Target, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I've found, is that it's probably easier for these companies just to pay for whatever than to figure out like their actual, where they are in terms of like usage and the terms. You know, it's just easier for them to like, okay, what do I need to do? Pay for it. Great. Now I don't have to worry about it.
Yep. Yeah, I suppose in the same vein as stock photography, and so they just assume that they have to pay for things like this and do. Although I guess the overlap is for some reason, I think stock photography is more in people's mind as they need to pay for it, whereas, you know, web componentry like this is, I don't know, I guess a bit less obvious that you have to. I assume there's some people that just assume stuff like this is free because they just haven't applied much thinking to it or something.
Yeah, that's definitely something I have to deal with, is getting over the typified, you know, like open source, free, everybody can use it, anything's, which is great, which is
yeah,
part of the reason where I am where I am today, is because everything's freely and available too. So this is kind of like setting a new precedent, but since I've been, you know, working on this for the past couple of years, I've noticed that it's popping up, you know, little by little. Other people are kind of taking on this model too.
Yeah, yeah, I've noticed it more and more. It's free, it's open source. You want to, if your thing makes money using it, then you need a commercial license. Or is it? I guess that I don't want to oversimplify it for you. Is it a little bit more complicated than that?
Unfortunately, the actual terms are, and I wish it were exactly what you said, where it's like if you're using for commercial reasons, then you should pay for the commercial license. And that's actually what I kind of first started working with. And since then there's, it runs into conflicts with other things like WordPress. You know, if people want to use this on WordPress, then it has to be GPL compliant. And so that's like a huge monkey wrench in the terms. But so right now this year I actually reached out to a lawyer and actually got legal counsel on like getting the appropriate license that like kind of, you know, does the most amount of good for the widest use case. And so now it's like, you know, it works with GPL. And if you want to use it without the terms of the GPL, that's what you're actually paying for. Because the GPL is kind of sticky and, you know, it has its own kind of problem. So the commercial licensing absolves you of the GPL stuff.
Nice, nice. It's been a while. We went through a little bit of the same process when we were trying to figure out whether things you build on CodePen should be licensed or not licensed, or which license is most appropriate. And I think we ended up at MIT for things for CodePen. And it's been a while since we've revisited it, but it has proven to be a pretty strong choice. I think we have yet to have any major problems with it.
Well, yeah, licensing is a real sticky thing because ideally it would work for you, you know, whereas I feel it's kind of like something I have to work with, you know, kind of like put in my parameters and figure out like the right thing. And a lot of people, I have trouble understanding it, and it's part of my core business model. So, but that's how it is. That's what I'm working with now. I'm still thinking about it.
Yeah. So what, yeah, keeping along the lines of business type of stuff, it was, When you decided to kind of leave normal paycheck land, was it, you know, I think people are just generally kind of interested in this kind of thing. Was it risky for you, or did you kind of have been thinking about it for a long time and were socking away money, or did you possibly even take funding for Metaphysi and so you have that as a runway or whatever?
Yeah, sure. So when I left my day job, and I previously worked at Twitter for 2.5 years. When I left that to do Metaphysi full time, I've been running Metaphysi for now 4 years. So I kind of already had established, you know, that it was bringing an income and it could sustain, you know, my family's lifestyle. And so it wasn't going out into the unknown brazenly. And so it was more just kind of like shifting over, like, okay, this is, it's, you know, my things are going to change a little bit, but I know what I can expect once I started going out on my own.
Sure. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us have similar stories here. Maybe our story was also involved some risk and some not risk. You know, we knew what we were getting into, and certain things had transpired that made us not. You know, it wasn't like we better be profitable in the first month kind of thing, which it wasn't with you either. So, you know, I admire people who take a bigger leap. But it's kind of nice to not have to, too, you know?
Yeah, I don't even know if I'm entirely built that way. If we were just like, we have no idea if CodePen's going to work. Let's wait 6 months to find out. That I don't know. That's not built into me, really.
I guess that's where funding sometimes comes in, right? Is that you know, there's some risk to it, but it also, you know, removes risk because there's money.
Yeah, I hear you there, Tim. I'm not in the mode to like jump out into the unknown. This was kind of just like a shifting of position.
Yeah, totally.
And then you lose the paycheck, but he also opens up more hours in the day to theoretically use those hours to grow the new thing. Cool. And you know, so you know, there was you wrote a guest post on CSS Tricks for the new one for Flickity, which is the carousels one and stuff. And yeah, so thanks for that article. It was pretty good. It kind of on point. You have a pretty good, I don't know, understanding of the vibe in the industry right now. So the article starts out with like a, you know, don't worry, people that are, you got your fingers on your keyboard ready to yell about carousels. Already it kind of addresses that you may not need a carousel thing kind of right off the bat, but of course people do need carousels, and you know, it's, you know, what people say and what people do and need are kind of two different things. But that didn't deter you in any way from building that particular one, right? You're just like, I don't know, people need carousels. I think I can do a good job. Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm interested in making things that, you know, I think I could make better. So whenever I touched like another carousel on a web page, you know, it didn't react as nicely, or didn't, I couldn't flick it, you know, or the animations were kind of weird. So I felt like I can make something better. And so that's what I set out to do with Flickity. And but that said, you know, I am not the authority on when you should use it, but I do try to like establish some good user experience within it, you know, cause a lot of people, what happens is, and I'm sure you mentioned this before, but you know, the feature request you can kind of get buried under where you kind of forget like what it should be going out and resolving. And so a lot of people want to use carousels in very creative ways. So I'm trying to be more diligent about what it does and what it doesn't do.
Right. That's kind of where I kind of wanted to lead this, is that we deal with, and you deal with, two big things. One is support and one with our feature requests. And you mentioned feature requests, so let's start with that one. You identified something that you could build better and you built it, but now that it's out there, surely incoming are all these feature requests. I think I remember one from the comment thread about kind of lazy loading, right? I think one of the use cases for a carousel is showing more images than you can see at any one given time on a page. You know, you have 10 images, you want people to flick through them. Well, we know from the world of web performance that loading one image or three images is a lot easier and quicker than it is to load 10. So why not load the fourth, fifth, sixth, whatever, only kind of when you need them? And I guess Flickity doesn't prevent you from doing that. So it has APIs and such that you could use to get that done, but it's not like a core feature, right? So is that one of your top ones, or were you only became aware of that after it launched and people were asking for it, or are you planning to deal with it, that kind of thing?
Yeah, lazy loading is the hottest feature of Flickity. and I actually I use GitHub Issues kind of to manage like all my support requests. And this one gets the most like plus ones. And I think it's a healthy thing to go out to your users like plus one issues, because I know it can be very aggravating for other developers when it's like the issue's already reported and then more people are just like plus one-ing, like, thanks, got it. But I think it's good because it provides another feedback, and your users and your customers can reach out and say like, you know, they're actually involved in the process. So in terms of actually adding this feature, I'm all for it. I think it absolutely should be added, but you know, it's kind of another piece of the picture, right? And my goal was to release Flickity with a core feature set that I felt was solid. And lazy loading was something that I wanted to do, and I want to do, but I want to do in the right way. And I also, I don't want to dive into it before I know the full landscape. So this is like, I'm releasing the version one of the product, and I don't know how people are going to be using it in the first place. So that's the reason why I haven't gone into it just yet.
That's pretty interesting. From our perspective, it's like, we know, for example, that education is a bit of a market for us, and professors want to use it. But why would we release every single feature that a professor may want to use just because before it's out there at all, before, you know, they can use a little bit of it and figure out what the landscape is like, as you said. So,
yeah, when you're building a feature, it's, I think a lot of people are like, you know, I want lazy loading, but I want to consider like, what's the best way to implement this and that the most people can use it, you know, with the greatest ease of use, as opposed to like just diving in. So that was kind of why I've held back and for now.
Yeah, you certainly would learn a lot about how your thing is used when there's hundreds of implementations you can look at. And then support is the other one you said you use. These things are open source, so thus GitHub. So why not just use GitHub issues, and that's what you do?
Yeah, working with support is something I've done experiments with. Like when I first started, I had an email, and I actually had like a support product. So you know, once you bought the thing, you could email me personally, and I found it was it just took a lot of time. And it wasn't a good use of my time because I wasn't really making my products better. I was just helping individuals one-on-one. And so since then, I think now my approach is kind of to like provide, this is not the right word, but like almost kind of like drain gutters, you know, where like all the support kind of similar things can gather into like one area, and eventually I can attack that one thing. So hopefully it's like an issue, or hopefully it's a, you know, like a little article I can post, or another piece of the documentation. And so that's what I try to do, is that if something happens where an issue pops up, I want to be, allow other people to find it and navigate to it instead of just working on things one-on-one.
Yeah, that makes total sense. We, for like a short time at WooFoo, would actually allow people, like we would call them, and it was very, very rare that we would allow someone with a major issue to talk to us personally. And what the biggest problem related to that was, like, once you solve this problem, you've only solved it for this one person. You haven't spread that out to the world at large. So if there are 10 other people having that problem, you may have to explain that personally 10 more times to 10 individuals rather than sort of like doing this scatter blast out to the world.
Yes. And typically it's not just like that problem. You know, there's like the surface level problem that the person's working on, but there's probably something that's like more fundamental. You know, it's like, are they dealing with poorly formed code, or, you know, is it a problem with how their HTML is like structured, where something needs to happen before another thing? And so identifying like these larger things, that's what I'm trying to focus on.
Sure.
So do you end up like kind of choosing to like write an article, or like, I guess what's the normal, like, how do you end up, do you end up contacting those people and say, hey, I rewrote this section of Flickity, or I wrote this article and it might be interest of you? I'm curious kind of how you handle the folks who contact you.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say I get an email and it identifies a problem, or, you know, maybe a difficulty. And probably what I'll do is actually like wait. I need kind of like two data points before I'm actually going to make a change. So I might get an email and a GitHub issue, hopefully, that are kind of related to the same thing. And then at that point, what I want to do is like to solve this and to solve it for all for future use cases. So the process is something like I make a demo with CodePen.
What's that?
And make a demo and then add it to the documentation and then respond to the people. And then also like in the response point that like this is added to the documentation, and hopefully that resolves it. But that's, I mean, that's also kind of difficult because then you're thinking like this resolves this one thing that one time. Is it really resolving the true problem?
Right. That's really interesting. I love to hear that, the idea of, you know, gutters draining into like one place that you're going to then address, because we do spend quite a bit of time. I think 2 weeks ago, I spent an entire week doing email support and fixing bugs that were written in, but it was an entire week of work that I could have been, you know, improving CodePen. So it's kind of an interesting balance.
Yes. The drainage thing just sounds like negative. Maybe it should be like they're moving upwards. They're like, they're right. Dreams, yeah. Or like
no, I like prayers. It. It's a good metaphor. We used a particular plugin on our WordPress install that runs the blog, you know, at blog.codepen.io. And the plugin upgraded, had a bit of a little new UI in the back end of it. And it looked good, but it broke something pretty fundamental to it. But it's an actively maintained plugin on GitHub. So I popped over, and the very top issue, of course, was this issue that was there. And I was able to drop in our situation and a live URL to the broken page, and the developer responded, and I was able to, you know, somebody else had kind of dug into the issue already a little bit, and I could see there, so there was kind of a hot fix I could do, but I was just checked in with the developer to see when they were going to fix it, and they had kind of an even easier fix for me that I could try even quicker, and it was resolved within like 30 minutes, you know, and that was nice. You know, there was the community was kind of involved with that fix, and it was nice in how quickly it could get resolved, and then I had the power to fix my own problem theoretically and that's made possible through the way that support was handled there, which is pretty great. We don't do that, unfortunately, at CodePen. It would be nice if we did. Maybe we could go there, but CodePen isn't an open code base anyway, so if we used it, it would I'm not sure that we would use GitHub issues, but we could use something like it to make it more public. And the downside being that, you know, kind of all your dirty laundry is available there to look at. And maybe that's the bad metaphor that I shouldn't use, but you know, it feels a little weird to know that every single, you know, you have 87 open bugs or whatever, you're like, ugh. And then the other negative being that it doesn't feel quite as nice. You know, I think getting a direct email back that addresses you by first name and acknowledges your issue and solves it, there's possibly a little bit more warm fuzzies with the personally acknowledged email. Not sure. I'm just spitballing there, but there's definitely ups and downs to both ways.
Yeah, like I would like my users and customers to feel empowered to fix their own problems. you know, but like these things are going to eventually get out somewhere. Like it's going to show up in Stack Overflow, or there might be a CodePen subreddit that you don't even know about that's like being littered with people hacking CodePen against your being aware of. So like these things are going to show up eventually, and I find that like kind of formalizing them just helps.
Pretty interesting stuff. So maybe we could end with that kind of obligatory question about you and your use of CodePen, how you use CodePen for your business and stuff. I think that would be kind of interesting to know. I see, you know, I follow you on CodePen, and I see when you post new pens, you know, they are often in that vein. They're in that, like, looks like you needed to demo something for somebody, and you did it. It's often not like a full-fledged demo of how to use a thing. It's just a little bare-bones thing, which kind of looks like it was probably a support request. But that's not the only way you use it, right? You probably have different ways.
Yeah, I apologize if you do follow me on CodePen, because it's very mundane. It's usually some reduced test case, which is like one of the fundamental things that you talk a lot about. I've made it a practice for each feature, for each kind of option and each setting of an option on one of my products, I have a test case for it, and I have a CodePen for it. And this is one of the things where, you know, enabling users to help themselves and giving them a playground for them to work with, as opposed to like telling them how it works, letting them figure out how it works by them changing the code. So for everything that's on the Metaphysics sites, there's a CodePen for it. And then in addition to that, you know, I've made a practice into my support requests. You know, if you have an issue, it needs to be paired with a CodePen or, you know, something of that nature. And, you know, this just like helps me do support instead of trying to like go back and forth with where's the problem with the user. And so that's why it's another good reason to have a CodePen for everything, because this allows the user to like immediately open up the CodePen, fork it, and create it real simple so we can get to figuring out what the problem is.
And you don't, that's, you know, you're in a way you're saying prove it too, right? I mean, you have a bug.
I mean, yeah, like that's, you know, just to get over the initial hurdle, like, yeah, where is this problem? Come on. And then, because then sometimes it's like, oh, that is a problem.
Right? Yeah,
like,
right.
And so it's really enlightening on both sides. And also, like, you have to think about the next user that comes in after that, right? Like, there's somebody that will eventually find this problem and they'll figure it out for themselves because they were able to see this other reduced test case. And so they don't even interact with me at all or either person because they, you know, it's all been documented for them beforehand.
I admit that this is a slightly unusual use case for code, but not the reduced test cases. That's a legit use case. But having, you know, like one pen per setting or and per feature and stuff, it ends up being kind of a fairly large pile of pens. Do you have a way to link all those pens to like the latest? Like, what if you push a change to Flickity? What happens to all those pens? How do you handle that? Do you have a way to link to the latest version of whatever you wrote?
Yeah. So right now the pens are all kind of pointing to like the latest version of the JavaScript or CSS, which, you know, has its own kind of problems because there might be a if there's a change, then I have to go back and change, you know, pens as opposed to a pen being like, this is this pen for this version, which I feel would get redundant every time I change things. I have to go back and change all the pens. Or like make new pens. So that's how I've been kind of working with updates on CodePen.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious. So is there a GitHub way to do that? I guess I wasn't really aware of that. Like, you know how there used to be like jQuery-latest, and it was always give you the latest one. But I suppose if you just link to the file, it changes when you change it.
Yeah, and then I hopefully like browser caching doesn't, you know, get me or the fact that it's like an iframes, but I found that it works. So far, so good.
Good. We were thinking about adding a little query string to the end of external assets that you can kind of optionally turn on that would kind of force a break in browser cache, you know, so I could see that being an issue. Sometimes, depending on where you link to it from. All right, cool. That's pretty interesting stuff. Definitely, you know, keep in touch. Let us know if I mean, maybe that'd be a final thing. I hate to put you on the spot, but if there's anything you can think of that would that bugs you about CodePen or that we wish was better or a feature that you wish we had.
Oh, I have gripes.
Nice.
Well, like you said, I kind of use CodePen a bit differently. That I'm making these lots of collections for, you know, each little thing, and so. I understand that my use case is specialized, but just like a way that like if somebody wants to see all the Flickity demos or all the Isotope demos, because right now it's like in groups of six. And so like the paging thing, I think it would be great if a user could come to like, these are all the Flickity demos. Maybe it's just like a text list or something like that. That'd be nice.
Oh, I see. A text list of a collection. So it's just all of them. That could work.
That's one.
Got it. Hold on. Let me get a pen.
and now it's been recorded.
This is the official CodePen pen that he's getting. We have one.
It's like I do have a question for you. It says on your website that Justin Bieber and Tyler Perry both use Isotope. How they're pretty good web developers, those guys?
They have personally used Isotope. No, but both their sites use Isotope, as I think Colonel Sanders as well.
Oh, indeed. Nice. Indeed, yeah. We're going to end up on TMZ today.
Yeah, it's a platinum product. And I, if you're ready for the Isotope lifestyle, you know, we reach out to your authorized Isotope reseller.
Oh, wonderful.
I should have asked you this early, but I feel like when people think of David DeSandro projects, Masonry comes up as one of the most. But is that one that just doesn't have a commercial license, or is that one just kind of like dead and you should use Isotope instead? Even though I know that Isotope has sorting and Masonry doesn't, but I'm just kind of curious about how Masonry fits into this larger picture.
Yeah, it's a bit complicated. Masonry is still like, you know, that's where I made my name, and it's still getting still big after the whole 2011 Masonry hype. So it's still, you know, being updated too. It's still latest. It's the best thing that does Masonry, in my opinion. So keep on using it. And Masonry is free and always will be free. And so I use it kind of as marketing. So hopefully it's like a foot in the door. People find, they start on Masonry and then they eventually find out about Isotope or Packery or some of the other things I make.
But you know, when you see an Isotope demo, it looks like Masonry, you know, it looks like the things are laid out such that.
Isotope uses Masonry. Actually, Isotope has several layout algorithms that you can select from. It's really powerful. Like Isotope's like a super Masonry.
That's what I needed. I needed to understand that. So Masonry is just kind of smushed into Isotope in a way.
Oh, I would say elegantly placed.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Sorry.
But yeah, it is. It's very much a smushing.
All right, cool. I think that'll do it for us. Everybody, thanks David for being on.
Oh, thank you guys.
Yeah, and thanks.
Thanks for coming on. It's great.
Thanks everybody for listening. Let us know how you like the show. If we should get more guests on or what? We probably will once in a while, but next week maybe we'll jump back into just topic related stuff. Anyway, until next time. See you later.
Bye, everybody.
Yeah. Nine, seven, six, zero, three, one, eight.